I'm Ron Burke, and this is the Saturday morning Bible study, and the topic for the morning is a family affair. For those of you who came expecting Elmer Witt, I am not Elmer Witt. If you haven't heard, Elmer, the director of the camp or Holden Village, went out for a board meeting, supposed to have been back yesterday, and he informed the village that he had car trouble, couldn't get back. Now, that's a likely story as far as I'm concerned. But since I'd been doing the last two, they asked me if I would fill in. And since I made the mistake yesterday of saying if I had a third time, and some people remember that, so here I am. Before we get into that, though, some people have been fascinated by some of the things I said the first day about some of the things that I do. And what a lot of people have picked up on is the fact that I spend most of my time nowadays raising Angora goats on a hill country ranch in Texas, which I inherited several years ago. And when I try to tell people where it is, I say it's close to Pontotoc. And if you don't know where Pontotoc is, don't worry about it, because most Texans don't either. But if you don't know where it is, that's understandable, because Pontotoc is a small town. Pontotoc is so small that their power plant is a Sears diehard. If you want more, say, how small is it? It is so small that they don't even have any last names in their phone book. Got a ripple effect here going on. They're so far back that they still think that E.T. stands for Ernest Tubbs. Hey, we got some country music fans here. From Union Gap? I don't know, but from Union Band, it's about 4.5 miles. Get your smart aleck Texans, they think. It's right north of Fly Gap, and not too far from Baby Head, if that helps you. And Grit's not too far away, too. So you Iowans don't have all the names of towns. We Texans have some, too. Pontotoc is large enough, though, to have a church. It's a little small, though, too. The church in Pontotoc is so small that instead of an offering plate, they have an offering saucer. They do not have a Lutheran church, and I was raised in a Baptist church, a Southern Baptist church. I knew it was a Southern Baptist church because when I went there and they read the Gospels, they read from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Bubba. Sometimes only Texans know what Bubba means. Saint Bubba. Saint Bubba? That's a good one. I have to remember that. My one regret, I guess, always was that they didn't have a Roman Catholic church in Pontotoc, because then I might have joined the Catholic church and taken the same route I did in the Lutheran church. I would have become a priest, and then being the climber that I am, I would have become a Monsignor and then a bishop and an archbishop, and I'm sure someday I would have been the Pope. And then I would have been known as the Pontiff from Pontotoc. Kind of has a ring to it. Well, I'm a long way from Pontotoc now, and I'm not sure how most of you people got here, but we flew, and I really am not the world's greatest fan of flying. My theory is that if God had wanted me to fly, he would have given me guts. I'm really not afraid of flying. I should make that clear. I'm afraid of crashing. There is a difference. I'm always looking for some sort of reassurance when I fly. Not too long ago, I had a speaking engagement in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and I'd never really flown into Mexico. I'd driven, and I was a little concerned about that because all the drivers down there are frustrated bullfighters, and I couldn't figure out what the pilots were like. So we were getting on the plane, Mexicana Airlines in San Antonio, and as we were walking on, I happened to glance, and the cockpit door was open. And on the cockpit dashboard, I guess that's what you call it, there was a little plastic statue of Saint Christopher, the patron saint of travelers. That made me feel a little better. Until I took a second look and saw that Saint Christopher had both hands over his eyes. There are a lot of people when they discover that I am a minister and that I do believe in the almighty presence of the omnipresent God, they wonder how in the world I can have this anxiety about flying. Well, I've done some checking in my Bible, and I want you to know that I am right. It says in the Bible very clearly, "Lo, I am with you." Don't say anything at all about I.
It says 365 times in the Bible, "Fear not," one for every day of the year.
And which airline do you work for? We flew up here at Delta, you know, there. We're ready when you are. Well, folks, I ain't ready. That's my answer to them. No, I've overcome my fear of flying. I'm ready for my angel wings or whatever it is that angels get. Well, enough of this jocularity. The third thing that I said I would like to talk about if I had the time to do it was, well, first of all, for those of you who may not have been around for the last two sessions, I talked about the things that have impressed me in this my third visit and the previous visits here to Holden, and talked first of all about the holy hilarity, the celebrative spirit of this place, and then yesterday we talked about the setting, this place as a reminder of the creation. And that third thing I said yesterday that if I had time I'd like to talk about is the whole family feeling that is here at Holden. And the Lord heard me and gave me the opportunity to do that. But I'm not going to do that. This is really going to be a family affair this morning in the fullest sense of the word. We're going to do the Bible study this morning, folks. I'm very democratic, plus I've run out of note. So that's what we're going to do this morning, is talk about family. When you hear the word family, what are some of the things that come to mind? Go kind of slowly and I'll put them down up here. When you hear family, what comes to mind?
Mother and father.
Mother and father. Sex. Can I put Ma and Pa?
Yeah.
Sex, did I hear?
Yep.
Boy, we getting into it quick.
Put that before mother and father, though.
I'm sorry, I don't have room.
Children.
Well, we're going in logical progression.
Disagreements.
I think of the family of God.
Okay, of God.
Family of Holden.
Holden. Other things that you think about when you hear the word family?
Sharing.
There are no wrong answers, folks.
Activity, work, and play.
No, there's no. We just put it in. Love.
Sorrow.
Laughter.
And sorrow. Okay. Doesn't have to all be positive.
Hate.
Holidays.
Fellowship.
Sharing.
That's all primary. Sharing, yes. Support.
Money. Inheritance.
Aging.
Inheritance or heritage? What do you want to say? Money is inheritance? Or?
Both of them.
I got my money the old-fashioned way. I inherited it. You did too.
I worked for it.
Really?
Huh? My dad left us $4.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to prove that. I once told a guy, I never worked a day in my life, and an old guy came up to me and he said, "You ain't missing nothing." Rivalry.
Separation.
Pride. Aging.
Caring.
Brokenness.
Brokenness.
Authority.
And I've run out of space, and I'm getting high on this, smelling this thing. What was the last one?
Authority.
Authority. That's all we got. That's enough. That's better than that lemongrass tea we had. Okay, that's a lot of things. It's interesting, I did this at 7:30 for the staff. And I think there's maybe one or two things on here that they had. They never did mention sex, but that was a younger crowd. Okay, that's an interesting list. Kind of covers the waterfront, as they say on Puget Sound. I'm learning to talk Puget. Okay, as you look at these things, what are some biblical events that come to mind with various things that are on here? Family and these things. Family events.
Creation.
The creation story, which comes in where?
Ma and Pa and sex and children.
All is in creation. We took care of the whole first part of Genesis. Okay.
Wedding at Cana. The wedding at Cana celebration.
Celebration? We don't have celebration. We have holidays, but okay. Wedding at Cana, that whole Jesus making wine.
Okay.
Prodigal son comes where?
Children.
Children.
Rivalry.
Sorrow.
Inheritance.
Sorrow.
Love.
There's one thing that did get mentioned earlier that I'm going to put up here because I like it. Got rid of it. Mentioning the prodigal. Belonging, that sense of, as who was it? Robert Frost said, home is the place where you go. When you go there, they have to take you in. Well, it's like that. So that prodigal belongs there too. Okay, sorrow is also the prodigal. Is that what you're saying? Other biblical stories?
Joseph and his brothers.
Where?
Rivalry.
Okay.
Love. Ruth and Boaz.
Ruth and Boaz.
Hate, Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel. And a little sibling rivalry, yes. Hate.
Aging. Aging up to the point of several hundred years.
Methuselah. Other biblical things?
Imagine the apostles had
fellowship. Fellowship? Okay.
And they
worshiped
in Mount Sinai.
Yeah, we got lots of examples. We're talking in the context of the family.
Whole family.
Yeah. Was there family worship?
Sorrow. Jesus wept when Lazarus died.
Jesus wept when Lazarus died. Was Lazarus part of his family?
But his sister was there. Sisters and brothers and cousins.
Okay.
Sarah and Mary.
Yeah.
Our word.
Love.
Okay.
Our caring.
Commandments. Authority.
Before we get to just hold that and just commit it. Not too long ago, I was doing research for a sermon or something, and anyway, ran across a little bit of information. I'm always learning about things. That has become very meaningful to me. We're talking about Mary, Martha, and Lazarus here, and their relationship to Jesus. And this commentator made the point of making that these people were part of the extended family, I guess, of Jesus. They were the one example in the whole New Testament of Jesus' really close friends. They had a little bit different relationship to him than the disciples. That whenever Jesus wanted to just get away from it all, go someplace and kick off his sandals and let his hair down and have a nice, cool, well, warm, room temperature glass of wine or whatever, where did he go? He went to Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' place. That they had that kind of relationship, that those people served that kind of place and function in Jesus' life, that where he could just go and relax and be what he was. And that, I think, is a neat kind of thing to know that Jesus needed that kind of place and group, and those people were very important to him. And suddenly I like those people a lot more than I did before, because I need people like that. We all do. And that is a form of family too. Now back to
commandments, authority.
Okay. What do we have commandments say about family? Boy, all the mommies and daddies know that one.
One.
Okay. Okay, that is the Old Testament lesson for Sunday. Those of you who were at the text study last night. Okay. Other things.
Jesus performed a miracle when he brought Lazarus back to life.
Okay. And how does that fit in with family?
Well, he brought him to the grieving sisters.
Okay. He restored a broken family, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Some other things? One of the most basic images of the Bible is God the Father and we as his children. And that has really taken on a deep meaning for me because it's something that I can kind of understand and comprehend when I'm trying to figure out my relationship to God. And I think that's so important for us to remember that God is our Father, we are his children. In baptism, we got his family name, and he's never going to take that away from us. It's kind of like, you know, I'm a Burke, and no matter what I do, I'm always going to be a Burke. I may get punished if I do something I shouldn't have in order. I may reap the consequences of some of my sins, my indiscretions, but I don't get kicked out of the family. That prodigal son parable is so beautiful in that respect, too. We're still in the family. We are accepted, we are forgiven, we are dealt with warmly and graciously in the family setting, the ideal family setting. So that we never have that name taken away from us. We're still in the family no matter what happens. And that's the whole biblical image of baptism. That in baptism we become children of the Father, we take on his name, we're in the family, no matter what we do, we're not going to get kicked out. We have that last name, Christian. Boy, does that say a lot to me. That's this sense of belonging. And I need that. I need to know that no matter how far I may stray, I can come back. And the waiting Father is there with open arms. It's an elastic kind of thing. You can go and you're pulled back. Although we have to say, I guess, that you also have the freedom in that to leave. Say, I don't want this family. You can leave. You have that freedom to leave. But God will not kick you out. God will not take your name away from you. That's a beautiful image to me. And that's that whole father-children imagery in the Bible. Other things here that bring out biblical concepts to you. Good Samaritan? Was he caring for his family?
His extended family.
Okay.
His friends.
For the family of God.
That's an interesting story because evidently he really didn't even know the person. He just saw someone in need and dealt with
it. Money.
Money? Ah, we're getting around to that.
When the prodigal son received his money from his father and went away.
Okay. And what did he do with it?
He had a riotous life and spent it all.
He squandered it.
He came back and got some more.
He was not a Northern European, you could tell. Okay, anything else?
Don't you have Jacob and Esau on rivalry?
Okay, yeah, that goes along with the... Joseph and his brothers. There's a lot of sibling rivalry in the Bible. And there may just be some today. Is there any sibling rivalry left in our world?
Carrie and Joseph and Mary. During the famine in Egypt, Joseph cared for his family. He fed them.
Even though they had...
put him in the pits.
That's a beautiful image too, that whole Joseph and his brothers story. That he had every right to say, no food here, folks. But that family tie was stronger than his hate and he fed them, and the family was reconciled, brought back together. Beautiful story.
I think some of the things we might forget about sometimes is that the whole family of God, that would include male, female, Negroes, like you say, Northern Europeans, the whole family.
Right, if it's what we just talked about, that God's the Father and we are His children, then that makes us members of a pretty big family, doesn't it? We've got a lot of brothers and sisters, and there's a lot of sibling rivalry in that family. Just starting with our Lutheran family, start looking at the several branches of that family we've got.
Could I ask you a question, Ron? This idea of God the Father is a useful and I guess comforting concept, but when Jesus talks about God as His Spirit, He worships in the Spirit of truth. Can we really have a Spirit as a Father? Even if we have a Spirit of love, in the sense of the divine, or is this something that we've just come up with, God the Father, this masculine thing, and get kind of upset if we think about it as a feminine thing, you know, like a song. Are we really dealing with what Jesus said God is like when we think of God as a Father?
Okay, who wants to wrestle with the doctrine of the Trinity here and how it fits in with family? Anyone?
Didn't God say this, my beloved Son, with whom I'm well pleased?
Spirit can mean lots of things. I was campus pastor at Texas A&M University for 7 years. Texas A&M, for those of you who may not know anything about it, for many years was an all-male military school, and very proud of the spirit of Aggieland. And the spirit of Aggieland was basically the family spirit, the team spirit, the fellowship, the one for all for one, that old kind of thing. There is that meaning to the word of spirit. Does that have a connection here?
Well, what about that where it said the word was with God and the word was God? In the beginning was the word. The word was God.
I felt much more comfortable with talking about making wine. The Bible plays with words, and there are a lot of concepts in the Bible trying to express in words that this one child of God does not fully understand, and I'll stand in front of you and tell you that. And I think maybe there is a place for us to try to really understand those, but there's also a point to stand back and wonder and awe and mystery. To me, the really important thing is that the Word became flesh. And that everything that God is and everything that He is trying to communicate got focused down into something that I can understand. Somebody once said, I can't understand anything that I can't put my arms around. And I've got some things I can put my arms around I can't understand. I was reminded of that at 3:30 this morning when somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, you're snoring.
Across the room.
Somebody got up and went for it. But I digress, folks. Anyway, I think to me the importance of that, the Word became flesh, is again that it is comprehensible. That God realized that with our human limitations there were a lot of things about Him that we could never understand. And if we could understand God, He would not be God. There's your nice logic question. But the whole purpose of Jesus is to say, God is concerned about you. He does care. He does love. He does have feelings and emotions. etc. You can just go on and on and on with those human things that Jesus communicated to us that we can't understand. And maybe in all of that is the whole father, son, mother, son, parental, child imagery. That this is a God who cared enough to send the very best, to make a cliche, that he is a caring parent about his children. And caring enough not just to let us go our wandering ways, but to come down right in the middle of our mess and try to do something about it. And in turn, the Word keeps becoming flesh again and again in each one of us. My favorite quote of Martin Luther's is that each Christian is a little Christ. A little Christ. You are Christ. I am Christ. The only way I can relate to God is through other people. I cannot relate to a nebulous spirit way off someplace. I just can't handle it. But flesh, that I can relate to. The only way I relate to God is through other people. And I better not put the only, but the main way, at least in my life, that God has related to me is through other people. God speaks to me through human lips. He listens to me through human ears. He comforts me in human arms. That's the family. And maybe that's the spirit. Don't hold me to that theologically. But when I start thinking in those kinds of terms, all these nebulous, mysterious words and concepts begin to take on a little flesh, and I can comprehend them and take comfort in them. Yes, ma'am.
Was there polygamy in the Bible?
It's interesting to see how discussions go. Yes, ma'am.
The family,
Guys had more than one wives, and they had children with those wives, and they had families. Are you leading up to something?
No, but with all the divorces and everything now, I've been thinking lately, well, maybe that's the way to go.
She said that, folks. I didn't say that. Well, that's the divorce. We didn't mention divorce. And is it a form of what do they call it? Serial marriages? Is that the term that the sociologists use now? And it is a form of polygamy. Not quite as structured and ordered, but it's an interesting question. Pardon?
Disrupting your family life.
Yes, it is. But it's a fact, and we're going to have to live with divorce. There are divorced people in this room, and they're still part of our family, aren't they?
Right.
All except one or two.
There are a lot of other things in the Bible, too, Ron, that are denounced socially, legally, so forth.
Yeah. This is a good place for me to shift gears. It's getting a little uncomfortable out here. You people have been here at various lengths of time at Holy Village. Some of you just came in yesterday. Some of you have been here a week or longer. I'm not sure if this question will be that meaningful to all of you, but in your experience here at Holden Village, what kind of family experiences, family images come out of Holden? Maybe with these words that we've got right here, limit ourselves to family.
Caring. And
laughter. Well, don't just throw the word out. You got to say something to go with it.
Well, there's no one, everybody's friendly, and if someone is in need of help, why, someone pitches in.
Right, whether it's wiping tables or coming over here and leading six Bible studies.
Right.
Yeah, right. Boy, we're all caring.
Or helping someone with their luggage. I've seen some of these young men around here that help someone that's carrying a heavy load, lighten it.
There seems to be a sense of caring here. Okay. Now, some other people were saying something. You said laughter. Mm-hmm. Would you care to?
Well, your funny jokes. Your funny jokes.
Mother! Okay, the joyous, celebrative spirit of...
You don't have to go on with a long face. Like, this is a church-sponsored camp, so let's not have too much fun. Even yesterday in our basket weaving, when we couldn't get it, I says, is anybody having fun yet?
Women?
Not then.
Not then.
Okay, some other experience. Yes, ma'am.
Separation. You meet some nice people, then they're going to leave the next day.
And
then you feel sorry.
Feel sorry.
Freedom to speak, then you know that they're not going to go home and gossip about you.
I don't know. What's your name? That is an interesting phenomenon that I notice. I float around a lot, places like this and doing things like this. And that has always amazed me. I don't know whether others of you, evidently you have noticed that too, but a lot of times, you know, I'll meet somebody just boom out of the blue, and in 5 minutes, suddenly they're pouring out their whole life to me. And I don't know them, and I'm saying, what's going on? Well, every once in a while, I find myself doing the same thing. That there seems to be something about a stranger dumping on them as opposed to dumping on somebody that's in your close family or a close friend. Now, I have heard psychologists trying to explain that by saying we all need that, and the nice thing about the stranger is that we won't see them again. And we don't have to worry about them going back and gossiping. Where if I open up to my spouse or to my friends, they're going to know that about me and take that home with them. And even though I care and know they care and I trust them, I've given them something very precious, and they could turn around and use that against me. But that's an interesting phenomenon, and I think it's a good thing. And maybe that is an extra reason why we need places like this and communities like this and opportunities like this to go off occasionally and dump our garbage on these strange garbologists. Another digression.
Yesterday, Barbara Lee talked about ministry of touch, and by the time she was through it, we all went out, and I think we were hugging everybody. A lot of them were really surprised, but it was really quite...
Okay, so you got a closeness. I'm not sure that fits neatly under someplace up here. But,
okay.
Yeah, the touch. The touch is so important. And touch is such a vital part of the Holden family. Yes?
Holden allows us to take on new family roles, too. Parents who everywhere else have had to be full-time parents of little kids suddenly get to be newlyweds again, because the kids are in Narnia and nobody knows where they are. Single people can be surrogate parents, because mom and dad have gone off to Heart Lake, and I want to be with the kids for a little while. And kids that have always been the youngest of three get to be big brothers and sisters to littler kids that are around in the village.
Okay, so it's a little role play. Variety. Good. Good. Yes?
I like the sense of wholeness. Like, we only get to eat breakfast together a couple of days a week and lunch at the same time. And we're never getting to share our meals and our time together. A lot of them we get to.
We pause for... That's a different... The traffic of Holden is very disruptive. Okay, so the opportunity to have a togetherness in a relaxed pace.
We are more whole as a family than we do at home. At home, we want to see us separate.
I would like to throw in a different angle to that. My wife and I are interdependent. She plays bridge and I don't. Anyway, but we kind of agreed, I think. when we came here to give each other the freedom to do that. And so we have not always hit the dining hall at the same time, and sometimes we've been a little late and we've gone in and filled the one spots up. And I really am, I've enjoyed that. Pardon me, Alberta, I've enjoyed eating with you too, but but that freedom to go and eat with other people in my family that I do not feel that I have to be with my regular partner all the time. We eat together a lot, but to eat together with other people and get to know them, that's been very meaningful for me too. And the meals, we really have to talk about the importance of meals in families, but that's, in many families, that's the only time they do get together. And meals, biblically and sociologically and every other kind of way, have been a symbol of togetherness and family and fellowship. You're right in the glare, but I think you're trying to say something.
To me, the most important thing, the most dominating thing about it is the sense of belonging. You know, the people, the place, everything, you just feel like you belong. And all of the love and, you know, the fellowship and the touching and everything goes with that. And it's all wrapped up in the fact that I feel like I belong to this place and these people. And it's very overwhelming for me.
That's, to me, is as I go around, you know, in the church, wherever I go, I seem to be just I walk in and I may not know anybody there. I feel right at home. I feel I have that sense of belonging. And that is, quite honestly, the main reason I stay with this thing called the church. I got lots of complaints about it.
Ron,
but that's
like
why I stay with it.
To Frank's comment, another thing, this is a family and the feeling of family, even though we haven't known them before, and also a feeling of trust. I haven't been in a place in a long time where I left everything I had with me in a room and walked off and left it locked and trusted everybody that went by my door, they would leave it that way. And I think that's something that is a wonderful family trait and something that exists here even though we don't know each other personally.
Someone else brought that out in a conversation the other night about the women feeling the freedom to walk around at night. Especially the urban women who evidently do not have that feeling of safety and freedom in their hometowns. So yeah, this is a place where we trust each other. And as far as I know, that, well, it's not a perfect community. Every once in a while that trust is broken, but very little. Some of you may have been here longer this year to know, but they have a very small history of breaking that trust.
Ron, to digress from Holden a moment, it's rather surprising that nobody has mentioned perhaps one of the most important families in the Bible, Joseph, Mary, Jesus, and the siblings. According to tradition, when Jesus' father died, when Joseph died by age 12 for Jesus in an accident, and Jesus spent that time until he was 30 making sure that his mother and his younger brothers and sisters were taken care of, and that they were brought up to a point where they could be independent. Then it was only at that point, when he had fulfilled his family responsibility, that he went into his ministry, work in ministry about age 30.
Okay, an interesting addendum. Thank you, Frank.
Ron, I think it's also interesting that those 25 or so items on the board, the meal is not listed, in spite of the fact that that's one of the sacraments of Lutheran Church.
Well, this was not meant to be an exhaustive list. Quite obviously, getting back to Holden, the meals are a very important part here. Sure. Enjoy it, boy. Okay. What are some other things about Holden as a family that have been meaningful to you?
I think all the worship experiences have been exciting.
Okay. How does that, stay with that just a minute, how does that fit with the family?
Well, the entire community is encouraged to attend, and so like if the whole family is in worship together.
if you remember the orientation, if Elmer said the same thing or whoever let it that he did to our group when we came in, that is the only expectation here. You're completely free the rest of the day, but they do expect you to come together at that time for what reason? No, 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 no. That's the event. For what reason? No, no. He said something
together.
Well, that is the time where we come together, the community meeting, so to speak. That is where we are all together at one time. For me, that's a reminder that, yeah, I've done my own thing all day, but I'm still part of this group. We're all here. And that's the family gathering. And the high point, if you have not been here for the Sunday evening yet, comes together on the Sunday evening Eucharist, where they really celebrate that in the sacramental meal. Okay, now.
I think all the volunteers that are here, they all are doing this as like in a family, working together and volunteering to do, clean the tables, do this, you do that. I think that's marvelous too.
The staff, the volunteer staff, really develops a closeness. As I say, I know that because I was on the teaching staff for 3 weeks in 82. And even though that staff is constantly changing, you really feel a part of a community, of a family. And that really came out in the family or in the staff Bible study earlier this morning, how meaningful that is. Yes?
And the girl who fried all the hamburgers yesterday said that she'd been here 13 months. She liked the winter better because it was a smaller group and they could be closer.
Yeah, you really get close together in the winter. Okay, let's shift, make one more.
Well, I think it's really nice that people really don't have roles they play here as far as job titles. Does that mean that you as a facilitator, maybe people have a lot of staff, but there's good flow of information back and forth, and no one sets up quote as an authority or something on a certain group. Because everybody's free to speak their mind.
Yeah. That's
not necessarily
kind of,
that hold the real world.
That's kind of fun. I've heard some people say, you know, he's a pastor. I just found out he's a pastor. He doesn't look like a pastor. He doesn't act like it. It's kind of fun to sit around and hold it sometimes and try to figure out who are the clergy. And it's also fun just try to figure out what anybody's occupation is. And really, who cares? And that's freeing sometimes to get away from that. Yeah. I would like to switch gears. We've got a quarter of our time left now. And take all of this, and we talked yesterday about taking hold and home. How do we take this kind of family spirit home to our families, whether it's our nuclear family, our extended family, our church family, or whatever it is. Maybe you already have all of these things that you have here at Holden. Maybe you don't. But how can we apply all of this stuff we've been talking about to our, quote, families back home, wherever that is, and whoever that is, whatever it is?
I think one of the things that would fit under what you're saying, but at the same time, is the freedom to discuss controversial issues and be open and include everybody and everything in the world. That's very hard to take back, though.
Ideally, a family should be open enough that we can disagree and still be part of the family.
But we usually don't. We get into a conflict.
And what happens?
Separation and all kinds
of. A lot of people leave. We're talking
about
the church.
I happen to be from the Missouri Synod background. And look what happened even in the Missouri Synod. This happened in families even. Family split over a church issue.
Yes.
But so how do you take, you know, how do you go back to family and say, well, or to a church family?
Gentle persuasion.
That takes forever and ever.
Yes.
I don't have a simple solution to that, except, as I said yesterday, I think seeds are planted here in Holden that do go home and blossom. And I think all that your responsibility, all that my responsibility is to go back and be what I am and in this sense, to practice what I'm trying to preach, and that is to accept those that I disagree with. And if they don't accept that acceptance, that's their problem.
But then what do you do?
Pardon me?
Then what do you do?
You cry a lot.
Or you walk away from it, or you...
What are you going to do?
Well, I'm not going to fight about it.
Just say that's their problem, yeah. Not yours. That's it.
It seems to me the answer lies in love up there. You've got to love.
Yeah.
And if they don't love, that's their loss. Yeah. You just need to love. And I think that's what we have here at Holden, is love, a lot of it. A lot of it's showing. And when we get back, we tend to all withdraw. And we've got to remember to be open when we get home.
I know. Take that person to Holden.
That's what I tried to do. I tried for years to explain to people what Holden was. I just gave up, and we brought 18 of them. So experience what Holden is, and listen to everything you've learned here. Treat me that way. Other things from Holden that you can take home. Yes?
I feel like I don't want to have the need to be in control as much. I want to take that home. I feel like I'm not way too much at home. I think I've had more freedom here by letting go of that.
Yeah, freedom to let other people be what they are. Are you talking in that respect?
Well, not just people, but just of situations, of needing to feel that at 8 I'm here, at 9, 10, and I fail my day so much, and I try to control all the activities in it and the situations, and by that I'm controlling the people, of course, that I'm around.
Letting life flow a little more. That's good.
Right. I think at Holden we have an opportunity to do a lot of rule shedding, as was mentioned a while ago, and perhaps if we could take that home to some extent, we can never really escape relational situations. Because a family is, of course, a series of relationships, but if we can see people as individuals rather than in categories of pigeonholing them, you know, here's the postman, and there's the policeman, and there's the minister, and there's baby Sue, and there's the neighbor, and there's the teacher, and that sort of thing. It makes it easy for us to dismiss them as human beings because we put them in a structural box, so to speak. If we take them out of that and see them as human beings, really as just simple human beings. I know this is, it's been very fruitful to me to take, say, a relative or a dear friend or something, and just take it and see them as a person. Not as somebody you work with or for or live next to or are afraid of as a boss, maybe, but to see them as a human being. This is very valuable. And I think Holden can maybe be a kind of training ground or a prep ground for that sort of thing.
I find it so interesting that it's kind of a standard little ritual that we have, even at Holden. When we meet new people, what is your name? Oh, and where are you from? And thirdly, what do you do? That seems so important for us to know that about somebody else. And I'm in a transitional period, and that's the hardest question for me to answer, because I'm doing so many different kinds of things, and I haven't found a short answer to that. And when I try to explain it, it just makes it a longer answer. And I've gotten to wondering, well, why is that so important for people? Why can't I? I'm trying to think of some other third questions to ask. I think Frank's got a good point here, that we do really classify people by occupation sometimes. And maybe that is doing them a disservice and us a disservice.
They're not interested in your intelligence, though. They're just interested in doing new things.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
They're always not interested in my intelligence either. It's my body they're always. Yes.
About 2 years ago, some of us got an answer that we found much more satisfactory. When somebody says, what do you do? I'm a full-time person.
A full-time person. May I use that?
Yes, please. We're trying to share that with as many people as we can.
How's the pay for a full-time person?
How qualified you are.
How qualified you are. Okay. Okay, some other things about Holden that would related maybe to your church. Or let's look at that. I assume most of you have a church family back there, wherever there is, to varying degrees of importance to you. I may just witness here, we have a group from our church in San Marcos, Texas. And I've been a member of that church in 14 years. And we've gone through, what, 5 pastors? I was campus pastor there, so I've served as interim pastor about 5 times. I got a full-time job as interim pastor at First American Church of San Marcos. But it's been very interesting. Some of the people from that church have been members of all those years, and others not the whole time. But the thing that has always impressed me about our congregation, our family, is that we've had our ups and downs with ministers. But our congregation has survived in spite of the ministers. And the thing about that is that we have, and I'm not bragging here, I think this is just fact, we have a good family spirit in our congregation. There's a closeness there. And Arnie Mays, of course. Arnie Mays in a hurry to get back to that vent. But we have, you know, that is what has held us together through all the ups and downs. And that is what has kept people coming to worship in spite of bad sermons. all those kinds of things. And I think we ministers sometimes need to realize that. That the church goes on in spite of us, and that there is something there that is just as important as great theology and great preaching and great teaching, and that is that togetherness, that feeling of belonging to a supportive, caring family. And I would like to say publicly that I know of at least one Lutheran church in the United States where I think that is happening.
May I add that a good fellowship chairman in a congregation can do a lot toward that.
Ex-fellowship. Yes, ma'am.
I think this setting is so awesome that it gives us a different way of thinking out here.
And how do you go back to it?
Well, we're surrounded by. That has some effect on.
Is your home congregation in as awesome a setting? How then do you deal with that?
Well, I believe that, I suppose one of the questions that someone would ask me is, say we were on a trip, the highlight was Golden Village, what's going on there? So I'd have to respond to that. And the way I feel right at this moment, and I hope I leave with this, that well, there's not this reluctance to establish a relationship with these people, whoever's there, and because we feel Christ's presence. I feel Christ's presence, and I feel it with the other people. So there's not this reluctance to establish a relationship first. It's already there.
You're talking about.
So this is that awesome part, I guess, that she was talking about.
There. You're talking about your home congregation, the people there.
What we would take home, I guess, that's what I was.
That you would be more open to relationships within that group.
Yeah.
Good.
Go
we ahead. Have a congregation that expresses in this way, too. We come from a congregation that expresses their feelings very openly.
In a good way, or?
In a good way.
And by that you mean the hugging and that, those kinds of feelings?
And caring and loving.
Good. Yes, ma'am.
We came up on 45 people on our bus from Iowa, and none of us, I don't know, some of them probably knew them, but I didn't know anybody, and I feel now that they're my family, and I know when we leave, there's going to be some tears shed. We've just gotten along beautifully on the bus, and 8 hours sometimes, all day long, and we just had a marvelous time.
There's nothing like taking an extended bus trip to create togetherness. You've ever been on those? Yeah, that's good. Well, any final words here of wisdom other than mine? We all need families. We live in an age when, sad to say, a reality is that the family image for a lot of people is getting some negative kinds of connotations. But I still believe that one of the most basic, beautiful Christian images is that family image. We've experienced it here at Holden. Many of us have experienced it in our home congregations. Hopefully we've experienced that in our own families. And may we keep that as kind of a beacon that life is a family affair. As we live in our own nuclear families, our own little families, and whatever larger extended families that we have.